Again, a big yasher kach to those of you with a busy schedule who have a lot to do to come out this evening. I would just like to, as I have done in the past, at this slot, I would like to be mechazik the end of the Seder, which unfortunately for many homes and many people is thrown into the pile of leftovers, and people mumble their way through Nirtza, mumbling their way through Chargadja. And what we'd like to do in the remaining time that we have is try to be mechazik the importance of the end of the Seder. It is a process, it is 15 steps, built one on top of another, that should end in a culmination of spiritual effervescence and overcoming of love of Hashem. But sometimes at the Seder, it doesn't always feel like that. So what we'd like to do is try to give us a perspective as we come to the end of the Seder. On Leil HaSeder, as we know, there are four cups of wine to be drunk. And although it is interesting that in the Talmud Yerushalmi, we are given multiple reasons as to why we have four cups of wine. In the Bavli, the Gemara that we learn most often, no reason is given whatsoever as to why we drink four cups of wine. We have to rely on Rashi and the Rashbam in the beginning of the 10th parak, who tell us that one of the reasons we drink four cups of wine is the four languages of Geula, the Arba Lashonos of Geula. And this is what we know from the beginning of the Seder, each cup representing another step in the redemption of the Jewish people. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach asks a penetrating question about the Dalet Kosos. This is brought in the Sefer Shalmei Moed, collected by his relative Rabbi Tovia Freund, who asked the following question. Why is it that if we want to remember the redemption in four steps, do we use wine? If I want to get the children involved, certainly wine is not the best thing to use. That would not be the most appropriate thing. Why don't we use, you know, four candies, four pieces of bread, four steaks, whatever it is? Why do we end up using four cups of wine to reflect on the geula, the redemption of the evening? So Shlomo Zalman explains as follows. He says, we need to understand that the four lashonos of geula, the four languages of redemption, are not individual points that exist by themselves, but rather you need all four together. The first stage of redemption, v'hotseisi, the relief from physical labor. The second step of hitzalti, the removal of all types of being a slave. The third step of ga'alti, referring to the actual physical extrication of the Jews from Mitzrayim. And then finally, v'lakachti, the spiritual elevation to be close to Hashem, to become actually the chosen people of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And each expression builds on the one before it. You cannot have v'lakachti without v'galti. And you cannot have that before v'itzalti or v'itzesi. Each one needs the step before it. I think we can all understand that if you go to a fancy restaurant and they put in front of you a beautiful plate of pasta, a freshly made steak, whatever it may be, that first bite is the best bite of the evening. After that, I'm sure it's good, but nothing is like the first bite that you have when you have that piece of food. And by the end of the steak or by the end of the pasta bowl, you're probably just putting in the last piece because you put down $50 and you want to make sure you get your money's worth. But it's not like the first bite that you took from it. That is the general nature with food. However, wine is different. Anyone who enjoys wine knows that the first glass is very nice. The first sip is enjoyable. But the more you partake of the wine and that feeling overcomes you, the next glass is better, and the third glass is better, and the fourth glass is better. Wine is unique as opposed to other foods, that it gets better and better and more enjoyable as you consume more and more of it. And therefore, says Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that is why we use wine on Leil HaSeder, because it is supposed to get better. It does not stand by itself. It is not one type of gula and another type of gula unconnected to one another, but rather it builds and it builds until a crescendo, until we are overcome with this feeling of redemption before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that can only come through wine. It cannot come through any other type of thing. With this in mind, I'd like to tell a story that I heard from Rav Elimelech Bitterman, who's a wonderful mashpia in Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Bitterman tells the following story about Rav Shmuel Munkus, who was a Talmud of the Baal HaTanya, the first Rebbe of Chabad, who was walking into a Beis Medrash and noticed that the Melamed, the teacher, was with his students, and they were learning the first parak of Bav Metzia, the first Mishnah. The first Mishnah of Bav Metzia is about two people who come across a talis, a garment of clothing, and they are trying to figure out which belongs to who. And this one says, this is mine, and this one says, this is mine. They're both tugging and pulling. Who owns this object that was found in the street? And the Rav Shmuel Mankus sees the Rebbe teaching the students this Mishnah, and he was quite a personality. He walked over to the Rebbe and he said, I have a question, if you wouldn't mind asking in front of the students. And Rav Mankus said as follows. He said, in Bav Metzia, we find that the words are repeated one after another. Ze Omer Ze Shali, Ze Omer the Kula Shali. Each type of the Mishnah repeats itself, and they repeat the same words. This one says it's mine, this one says it's mine. We also have another area in our liturgy in which we have a repetition of the same thing again and again, and that is in Hallel. At the end of Hallel, going through that very long perek, that is the second part of Hallel, we all know that the psukim repeat themselves, right? We know that we repeat the psukim at the very end of the perek, in order one after another, right? Hodul Hashem Kitov, Hodul Hashem Kitov, each one again and again. As to why we repeat those psukim, that's a Rashi at the end of Sukkah. Rashi explains that if you look at the first part of that perek of Tehillim, the themes repeat themselves. Pasuk Aleph has this theme, and then Pasuk Beis repeats that theme. At the end of the Perek, it doesn't do that anymore, but in order to keep the theme of repetition in Hallel, we repeat the Psukim in order to mimic the first part. Fine. In all of our Siddurim, how are those repeated Psukim written? The first Pasuk is big, and the second Pasuk is small. The next pasuk is big, and the repetition is small. So Rav Mankus asked the following question. How come when it comes to saying Hallel, the printers put the first pasuk big, and the repetition of the pasuk small, but in the first Mishnah of Bav Metzia, they repeat the same words again and again, but all of the printing is in the same size? Why didn't they make the printing smaller when they repeated the same thing again, that this talis belongs to me, and this one says the talis belongs to me? So the Malamed looks at Rav Mankus like he's out of his mind. His students are in front of him. He says, that's the most, what kind of a question is that? So Rav Mankus smiles and he replied as follows to the Rebbe. He says, in Bav Metzia, we're talking about money. And everyone loves money. And this one shouts, the talis is mine. And this one shouts, the talis is mine. And nobody's backing down. Do you know why? Because we love money. But by the end of Hallel, and we've said the psukim again and again, over and over again, we are not so emphatic anymore. And we become lazy. So we repeat the pasuk, we say the pasuk the first time at the end of Hallel, and then we repeat the pasuk again. But it's Hallel, and we're tired, and it's a long day. So we say this second pasuk without so much emphasis. And therefore, the printers know that. So they print it small because we're not paying attention anymore so much, and therefore they made it in a smaller way because we're not so emphatic. And therefore, says Rabbi Bitterman, we need to know by Leil HaSeder. When we come to the end of the Seder, we must be emphatic. Let's not have our Haggadahs have small print by Chag Gadah. Our Haggadahs should be loud and clear that we have emphasis, we're excited to end the Seder, just like a person who sees $100 on the floor and screams, that money's mine. So too, by the end of Leil HaSeder, let's not have our Haggadahs printed with small letters because we're tired. Let our Haggadahs scream with big letters that we're excited to come to the mountains, to the pinnacle of this amazing journey, and cry out to Hashem, L'shana Haba, Yerushalayim Habnuya. Let's turn now to Shvel Chamascha. The Lubavitcher Rebbe in his Haggadah explains why are we inviting Eliyahu HaNavi at the end of the Seder over here. So he has a brilliant explanation. He says that we know that by the Korban Pesach, a person cannot bring the Korban Pesach unless they have Bris Mila. If the person does not have Bris Mila, then they are not appropriate to bring the Korban Pesach. Who is the Malach HaBris? Who comes to every Bris Mila to ensure that we are prepared for the Bris Mila? It is Eliyahu HaNavi. We all are familiar with the Medrash. The Medrash tells us that Eliyahu HaNavi was disparaging the Jewish people, and they say, don't do any mitzvos. And then what happened? Hashem said, Jewish people don't do any mitzvos. I think they're especially careful at one particular mitzvah, and that's the mitzvah of Bris Mila. And therefore, as the Igra Zakal of the Bnei Yischaska writes, the punishment of Eliyahu Navi, so to speak, was that he has to go to every Bismila. Eliyahu Malach HaBris comes to all the Bismilas. That's why if a person goes to the Bismila, they get Kapara and Shuba, because Eliyahu Navi doesn't want to hang out with Rishayim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, fine, you go to the Bismila, whoever goes to the Bismila as well, I'll give them Shuba and Kapara, and therefore it's a big schus to go to the Bismila. So by Leil HaSeder, where we are reenacting the offering of the Korban Pesach, Eliyahu Navi comes to make sure that Klal Yisrael are good on the Bismila, ready to offer the Korban Pesach, to make sure that we can fulfill this avoda as appropriate. And therefore, that's why we open up the door at that point in honor of Eliyahu HaNavi. Let's turn now to an interesting point in many of the Haggadahs. I don't know what your Haggadah says, but in my Haggadah, or many, many older Haggadahs, there's an interesting point in which we are told to count Sfira. In some Haggadahs, it's at the very end, right before Shir HaShirim. But in some Haggadahs, for some reason, they tell you to count Sfira right before Echad Miyodaya. This is noted by Rav Moshe Katz, Rav Yaged Moshe, which is a classic sefer on the Haggadah. And he notes that there are different minhagim of when to count Sfira at the end of the Haggadah. But there's this very strange minhag that the Haggadah stops right before Echad Miyodaya and tells you to count Sfira. It's a very strange place. He says either count Sfira before Nirtza, after the fourth cup, when you really finish the main part of the Seder, and Nirtza is again the dessert of the Seder, so to speak, or count Sfira after Nirtza, at the end of Chag Gadah. Why are we counting Sfira at this strange point by Echad Miyodea? Very strange printing choice by the printers. Lefinas Daiti, I would like to offer the following suggestion as to why we count Sfira at the beginning of Echad Miyodea. We have to take a step back. There is a remez, I feel, to the counting of Echad Miyodea in the Torah. Because the Torah tells us in the introduction to the mitzvah Sfiras HaOmer, V'sefartim lachem mimacharas HaShabbos. You are to begin counting Sfira the day after, which we know Shabbos to be, the first day of Pesach. I think that we find, as well, our own counting at the end of our Pesach Seder. B'safartam l'chem imachas HaShabbos, we also count at our Seder. We count by Echad Miyodea. I think we have a remez, the idea of singing this song Echad Miyodea, in the Torah. B'safartam l'chem mimacharas HaShabbos. At the end of your Pesach Seder, you also need to count. You'll begin counting 50 days towards Sfiras HaOmer, that's true. But you also need to count 1 to 13 to get to understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu and His Midos and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to us. And I think we can also see this within the counting of Sfira itself. We know that during Sfiras HaOmer we invoke the 7 of the 10 Sfiros, 7 of the Midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that correspond to 1 week of the 7 weeks of Sfira. And then within that week, we know that there are those spheres repeated again. So you have Chesed and Gvura and Malchus and Yesod and Netzach, all those different things. Now, I'm not claiming to be anything of any type of Kabbalist, but we can understand these ideas of the spheres and the representation of their midos on their own. And I would like to suggest that the steps of Echad Miyodea correspond to the 7 spheres. And they fit together as one beautiful counting. I'll show you. The first of the spheres of Sfiras HaOmer is Chesed. The first two of Echad Miyodea is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one and the Luchos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kel Erech HaPayim, the ultimate Baal Chesed, together with the giving of the Luchos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Luchos were given the Chesed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did all the work. We messed up. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Luchos again. The Luchos representation of that Midah of Chesed of Hashem. The second step of Sfira, the second week, is the Midah of Gevura, of strength. Who is the greatest of Gevura of strength than the Avos and the Imahos, who were tested again and again, showing in their DNA what they are made of, persevering for the sake of their children? Obviously, 3 and 4, our fathers and our mothers, are the Midah of Gevura. Then the third week of Sfira is Tiferes. Tiferes is the Midah of balancing. Not too much here, not too much there. Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebichsav representing Chesed. Torah Shebaal Peh representing the Midah of Din. We find in Kabbalah as well, balancing Tiferes, one on one side, one on the other. There is a beautiful idea that is often discussed at the Aron Kodesh is made of two types of elements. It contains wood and it contains metal. Why didn't Hashem just make it all of gold? That would have been much prettier. Why have a wood inside to the Aron Kodesh? Because wood represents the Torah's ability to expand and ability to adapt in certain situations. But at the same time, it is also bound by metal. It cannot go too far. There's a balance in the Torah. There is the din, the strictures and the structures of Torah, but also the chesed, the ability to adapt and to mold depending on the situation, but has to be bound together, this mixture of Tiferes, Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebaal Peh. The fourth week of Sphira is Hod. Hod means glory, but as the Malbim writes in multiple places, there's a difference between Hod and Hadar. Hadar means majesty that is outwards. Hod means majesty that is inward. A sense of tznius, a sense of humility, a sense of modesty. And in this week of Hod of modesty, we find pregnancy, which is the 9 months of pregnancy, and the Aseres HaDibros. Why? There's a classic question on the Haggadah. Why are we discussing number 9 for carrying a child for 9 months? That's not uniquely Jewish. All the other things are uniquely Jewish things, but carrying a child, everybody in the world does that. Why is that something that's discussed? So Rav Yashav explained in a number of different cases that the 9 months represent Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe was saved because really he was born 3 months early, and he was hidden away for those 3 months, because the Mitzvah expected him to be born at a certain time, but he came out early. And because of the idea of the 9 months, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to come forth and be saved because they tricked the Mitzvah by hiding him during those 3 months. Moshe Rabbeinu, who is hidden throughout the Haggadah, there's no open representation of Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the sense of tznius. Moshe Rabbeinu, who is Sanua throughout the redemption of Mitzrayim, as we tell over on Seder night, is the representation of Hod. He is majestic, but in a Sanua, humble way. No one is more humble than Moshe Rabbeinu. And what about 10? The giving of the Aseres HaDibros were given on Har Sinai. What is more humble, more tsanua than Har Sinai, who refused to be acknowledged, but at the end of the day was chosen because of the inner majesty, the hod, that it represented. The fifth week of Sphira is Yesod. Yesod represents foundation. And therefore we come to numbers 11 and 12, that is the 11 stars who bow down to Yosef, who corresponds to Yesod, who is the foundation, the Yesod HaAmuna, and together along who led the Shvatim, who is the leader of the Shvatim, who is the Tzaddik Yesod Olam. Bnei Yisrael, Yesod means foundation. Bnei Yisrael are founded by the 12 Shvatim. They are a foundation, they are a structure that is built off in that sixth week of Sphira, culminating in the seventh week of Sphira, which is Malchus, where we come to the Yud Gimel Midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Melech Malchei Amlechem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, fitting in as well. We reach the end of Sphira, the end of Echad Miyodea, and we're Mekabel Ol Malchus Shemayim. We accept the Torah, Hashem is our King, the Yud Gimel Midos Rachem, the manifestation of the Malchus of Hashem, and we find that Moshe asked, Hareini Na'es Kvodecha, show me your glory, and he was given these 13 attributes. On Rosh Hashanah we say, Moloch HaLa'olam Kulo B'Kvodecha. Hashem's Malchus comes through these 13 Midos of Mercy. So I would like to suggest that we say Echad Miyodea, fitting in with the beginning of the counting of Sfiras HaOmer, just as we begin our counting of Sfira towards Shavuos, so too, the Safartam Lachem Mimacharas HaShabbos, we begin to count as well for ourselves up until 13, fitting in together with the Sfira of Sfiras HaOmer. Chad Gadra. As I've mentioned in the past, there is only one Pashat Pshat in Chad Gadra, and that is the parish of Rav Yosef Zachariah Stern, the Rav of Shevel, who passed away over 100 years ago. You can go back and listen to the tapes if you want to hear that pshat over there. Anything else is just going to be commentary on that. So we would like to suggest another pshat this evening in Chad Gadra. This comes from Rav Aaron ben Moshe Teumim. Rav Aaron ben Moshe Teumim in 1690 was appointed the rabbi of Krakow after being the rabbi in Worms, Germany. And unfortunately, he was arrested on Shabbos while on his way to a meeting of the Vat Arba Artzos. He was beaten mercilessly by soldiers, never making it out of his wounds. dying al Kiddush Hashem. He has a Peirush on Chagaja that is often printed in the back of the Haggadah, of the Medrash Haggadah, which is the Haggadah attributed to the Malbim. The Malbim does not write a Haggadah, but someone wrote a Haggadah and said the Malbim wrote it, and therefore we call it the Malbim's Haggadah. The Malbim didn't have a Peirush on Chagaja, but he did have but the publisher put the Peirush of the Matzah Aaron, Rav Aaron ben Moshe Tumim, together with it. So this is what you'll find in the back of the Malbim's Haggadah. It is not in the English translations of the Malbim's Haggadah, which is a big chaval and not a smart choice on my part. But I didn't write it, so that's up to the publisher. So how does Rav Aaron Tumim explain the Chagaja? He says that the Chagaja is Yosef HaTzadik. Why is the Chagaja, why is the Gedi Yosef HaTzadik? Because Yosef is the 10th of the Shvatim, since Levi isn't counted amongst the Shvatim, and he corresponds to the 10th month of the year. The 10th month of the year is Teves, and the Mazel of Teves is Gedi, and therefore Yosef, who is Gedi, comes in, that's the month of the Mazel of the year that corresponds to Yosef. This is part of a bigger discussion, not for right now, but Rosh Shlomo Fisher, in his Beis Yishai, explains that if you notice, the two major tragic events of the Jewish people, which is the Shavuos Arba Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, they have corresponding events in Tanakh, right? We have the Meraglim, which is Tisha B'Av, and we have the Cheder Egel, which is Shavuos Arba Tammuz. How come there's no Tanakh event for Asar B'Teves, which is the siege? How come there's no Tanakh event? Shlomo Fisher wants to say that the Mechiras Yosef occurred on the Asar B'Teves. He has a whole complicated explanation to show why it's the case. He says that it occurred on the Asar B'Teves, but we need to know for now that Yosef is the Gedi, is the sheep that occurred on the Asar B'Teves. And he was sold because of the coat that cost 2 Salayim, which we find in the Piyut itself. Comes Yishmael. Yishmael is the cat that took Yosef and sold him down to Mitzrayim. The Midah of Yishmael Salaka Karasatov, and the cat, as the Gemara says, Laksa Karasatov, which I think we can all agree upon. And together with that, we know Yishmael Laksa Karasatov because we took care of Yishmael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Yishmael a well of water, and when the Jewish people were sent into Galus, Yishmael came and gave us these bags of hot air, which the Jewish people ingested and suffered from it. So we see the lack of Hakaras HaTov for what Hashem did for Yishmael. So they take Yosef and they sell him down to Mitzrayim, which is the dog. The dog represents Mitzrayim. Lo yicharatz kelov l'shono. The meat of Mitzrayim is a dog, he explains in Kabbalah, and therefore they go down to Mitzrayim. They sold Yosef to the Mitzrayim, as we said, the Kelev, and the Jewish people stay in Mitzrayim for a long time, and the stick is the staff of Moshe. The stick of Moshe comes to reveal where Yosef is buried underneath the water, and the seed of Mitzrayim, which is the Kelev. So the stick comes and hits the Kelev. Then comes the fire, which is used in making the Cheder Egel. The Cheder Egel was mevatel; it ruined all of the good things that Moshe did to get Yosef out of Mitzrayim. In addition, it made an Egel, which was a perversion of Yosef, who's the ultimate shore. Yosef represents the shore, the ox, and the Cheder Egel is a perversion of what Yosef represented. So Moshe responds to the Cheder Egel by doing what? By taking the calf and grinding it up into water. So water puts out the fire, and he makes Bnei Yisrael drink the water. So Moshe makes everybody drink, and then this was then ruined later on by Pesel Micha. Pesel Micha was the statue that was made. Micha went and figured out how Moshe Rabbeinu got Yosef to come out of the water, says the Medrash, and therefore this is the shore. Pesel Micha was in the shape of an ox, and that came and ruined all of the good things that Moshe did by having Bnei Yisrael drink the water. Now when Adam HaRishon sinned, so that ruined the spirituality of all Balei Chaim, all living animals. Therefore, after the Chet HaEgel, and all the spirituality was ruined again by the sinning of the golden calf, so how do we find spirituality in animals? So that comes through Shechita. By shechting an animal, that gives it Kedusha, that we ingest it, and we make a bracha on it, and it gives Kedusha to other animals in the world. So comes the Shochet, and shechs the ox representing the negativity of Pesel Micha, and by ingesting it through the kosher aspect of Shechita, therefore it becomes a holy endeavor at this time. There is a story told about the Baal HaNesivos, Rav Yaakov Lorberbaum. So he was told once that the shochet in his town was taking a few drinks of whiskey before he went to Shecht. And obviously that's not appropriate if you're a shochet to be drinking alcohol before going to your job. So the Baal Nesivos went to the shochet and said, I know it's cold outside and you want to warm up with a little bit of schnapps, but it's not appropriate to be drinking, you know, before you go do your job. So the shochet said, you leave me alone, you do your job and I'll do my job. And you know, don't tell me what to do before I go to my job. I don't tell you what to do when you do your job, Rabbi. So the Baal Nesivos looked at the shochet and he says, now I understand the pit of Chad Gadra, because I didn't get it. The shochet is just shechting, and he's doing his job, so why is the Malach HaMavah come and bother the shochet? He's just doing a simple job, what's the big deal? So he says, I get it, because the shochet was drinking 4 cups of wine, and then the Malach HaMavah said, you know, this is what's going to happen to you if you drink before you go and shecht. So this is why the shochet is killed in Lehel Seder, because of the 4 cups of wine he had beforehand. So, however, how are people helped in this world? If Balei Chaim, if animals are cured and they're given Kedusha through the shechting of the animal, so then where's our final tikkun? Where's our final preparation and perfection? As the Ramchal writes, that only comes on the Yom HaMisa, when the Neshama leaves the body. That's our ultimate connection to Hashem, and that's when the Malach HaMavas comes and he does his job as well. And at the end of days, all this will be rectified by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's taking care of the Satan and the Malach HaMavas us and bring Gula, as he concludes, as Rav Aaron Metumim concludes, Uval Tzion Goel, that will be the final rectification of Yosef HaTzadik at the end of the day. Which leads me to ask the following question. Why are we talking about Yosef at the end of the Haggadah? Why is the bookend of the Haggadah Yosef HaTzadik? It doesn't seem to make any sense. Of all the things we could end the Haggadah on, why is Yosef the final theme? So in order to answer this question, we need to turn back to the opening bookend of the Haggadah, and that is Karpas. The selling of Yosef was the beginning of the process of Galus Mitzrayim, as Rashi tells us that when Yosef went down to begin the process to look for his brothers, that began the story of the Geula and the Galus that would come out with Bnei Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim. The Gemara Masechta B'Samachei says that when Bnei Yisrael would come back from offering the Korban Pesach, they would carry the Korban Pesach on their backs home with them. So Rashi tells us that this is the same way the Yishma'elim, merchants, would carry their goods when they would travel. So who cares? What's Rashi hacking me at Shainik about the Yishma'elim carrying their goods the same way we bring the Korban Pesach back? What does Yishma'el, merchants, have to do with the bringing of the Korban Pesach? Comes Rosh Shlomo Kluger, Hagon HaTzadik Rosh Shlomo Kluger, and opens up Karpas in a way that you will not forget ever again, and you will not consume Karpas in the same way. Rosh Shlomo Kluger explains as follows, that the Pesach Seder, we talk a great length about the evils of Paro, and the Mitzrayim, and the servitude, and the subjugation, and all the difficulties, and all the miracles that happened. But do you know what? Sometimes we forget how we ended up in that case in the first place. Why were we enslaved? How did we end up in Mitzrayim? We have this selective amnesia that we just begin to say, like, oops, we end up in Mitzrayim. I don't know how we got here. It must have been a mistake. Something went wrong with the GPS, and we ended up in the land of Egypt. But we know deep down inside that's not entirely true. We ended up in Mitzrayim for a very specific reason. What triggers this memory? In the absence of the Korban, we have the Korban Pesach in the past. We would bring home the Korban Pesach, carrying it like the Yishma'elim who sold their things, but we don't have the Korban Pesach anymore. So what do we do to remind us of Yosef HaTzadik? So after Kadesh, we wash our hands before eating the vegetable, which we call Karpas. It's a funny name. It's a Yerek. We should call it Yerek. Why do we call it Karpas? What does Karpas even mean? So in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, the Torah tells us that Yaakov made for Yosef a coat of pasim, a kasones pasim. And Rashi explains that pasim means not a coat of many colors, it means fine wool. A coat of beautiful fine wool. Adding, says Rashi, that it is similar to the term Karpas, used in Megillas Esther. Achashverosh took out the clothing of Hur Karpas Utecheles. Karpas means beautiful, fine clothing. And therefore, in describing this opulent decor of the coat of Yosef, he obviously Achashverosh was not hanging vegetables on the walls. He was taking fine wool and fine linen and making beautiful clothing. And therefore, what does that have to do with the vegetable dipping in salt water? Comes Rabbeinu Manoach and the Rambam and says, "Va'anu noagim bekarpas zecher lekusonas pasim." When we take karpas, it is to remember the kusonas pasim, the coat of Yosef. Shase Yaakov avinu leYosef asher besavta nisgalgal hadavar, and because of the coat of Yosef, everything spun out of control. Vayardu avoseinu Mitzrayim, and our forefathers went down to Mitzrayim. We cannot hide it anymore. We open the seder and we say, do you see this karpas? See this vegetable? It represents the problem of every single thing that has ever happened to us in Jewish history, because we cannot get along with our brothers. And we take the karpas, and as the Ben Ish Chai says, we dip it in the salt water, representing the blood of the goat that was used to take the coat and dip it into it. And we say, hopefully this will be the last time that we will not suffer ever again, because we cannot treat each other nicely like brothers and sisters in a way of ahava and shalom. It is an unfortunate thing that we have to deal with. But if we begin the Seder by saying, I don't know how we got here. It was a mistake. We got lost. We ended up in Goshen. And then all of a sudden, 210 years later, we got in Mitzrayim. We are missing the point of the beginning and the end of the Seder. We ended up in Mitzrayim because we messed up badly. Because we sold our brother into slavery and things got out of control. And before you knew it, we were inside one of the worst events of Jewish history. Because we couldn't get along. And that's the karpas, the coat, the beautiful tunic of Yosef that got us into trouble in the first place. And therefore, I don't even have to end, I could just end right here. We all know the end of the story. Why do we end the Seder with Chag Gadja? Why do we end the Seder with the story of the son of Yosef? To remind ourselves, because sometimes the Seder is a bit long. And even though we may have started it a couple of hours ago, or more than a couple of hours ago, and we remembered, oh, we were talking about Yosef being on the Seder, but I'm not sure why. One more time, we end with the story of Yosef. Just like Karpas is this hidden message of Yosef, we sing Chag Gadja, another subtle hidden reminder of Yosef, the things that spun out of control and led us in a terrible direction. The Gemara in Brachos says, "Kol parsha shehaisa chaviva al David pasach ba'ashrei v'sayim ba'ashrei." Any parak of Tehillim that David loved, he began with Ashrei and ended with Ashrei. When you begin and end with something, it tells you what is in the middle and what the main idea, what is the most important thing. And therefore, the subtle message of the beginning and the end of the Seder is, be nice to each other. To be a good brother, to be a good sister, to love one another, and don't make the same mistake again and again and again. Because you can sing L'shana Haba B'Yerushalayim Habina with all of your heart and all of the tears and all of the machshavas you want. But if you are not a nice person, it's going to get you nowhere. And therefore we remind ourselves of the beginning of the Seder, and we close the Seder, how we got here in the first place. It should be a year, it should be a Pesach of simcha, of ahava, of love and respect for one another and for all of Klal Yisrael.